Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, June 26, 2014. An umbrella group of South Sudanese political parties call on pro and anti-government forces to finally reach a peace deal.
The South Sudanese people should not lose hope in the peace process. And the reason is that now all the stakeholders are involved in searching for peace.
And one analyst says the two sides may not reach a deal by August deadline.
IGAD would need to work harder than perhaps it has been now, given the fact that the two parties are not necessarily cooperating to make sure that they are brought to the table.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Leaders of South Sudanese political parties under an umbrella organization called the Political Parties Leadership Forum today called on the country's warring parties and IGAD mediators to resolve obstacles holding up the peace talks in Addis Ababa. The leaders also called on mediators to ensure that a comprehensive peace agreement is reached quickly so that peace returns to the country. For VOA, Waki Simon Wudu has more from Juba.
South Sudan's 21 political parties called today's news conference a day after discussing how to move beyond the stalled talks. Achuel Malith Bankol, representative of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement ruling party, read from a joint statement.
The ongoing senseless war is devastating and causing unnecessary suffering to our people, and all efforts must be exerted to bring it to a speedy end. We, the people of South Sudan, must rise above our individual group and party interests and put the interests of our country above any other considerations.
The party leaders wondered aloud how a conflict which started as a political disagreement within the ruling party could be allowed to devastate the entire country. Bankol urged the government and the opposition to strike a deal on the details of an interim government within the 60-day period as agreed 2 weeks ago.
We call upon the two parties, the two warring parties, i.e. the government of Republic of South Sudan and SPLA in opposition, to consider the plight of the masses of the people of South Sudan over the years and come to the negotiation table forthwith, in good faith and with political will, to stop the ongoing war and urge the country into sustainable, everlasting peace.
The parties are also calling on the main protagonists to allow all stakeholders to participate in the peace process so that the resulting peace deal is acceptable to all. They also urged both sides to allow aid workers access the hundreds of thousands of people affected by the conflict. The head of the opposition SPLM-DC party, Lama Kola Jawin, called for patience among South Sudanese citizens.
The South Sudanese people should not lose hope in the peace process. And the reason is that now all the stakeholders are involved in searching for peace. And that is why we as political parties and other stakeholders like civil society organizations, like the faith-based groups, are active. And this is why we are meeting to see how best we can influence the process. It should not be left to the two parties alone.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan says more than 100,000 people have now taken refuge in more than 9 of its camps across the country. The UN also warns that nearly 4 million people face the risk of famine due in large part to the conflict which disrupted farming activities. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu.
South Sudan political parties are not the only ones calling for peace. German's ambassador in Juba is also expressing concern about the recent adjournment in talks, saying both sides should get back to the bargaining table soon and should focus on a negotiated settlement rather than gaining military grounds. For VOA News, Philip Aleu has this story from Juba.
Ambassador David Swak says Germany is calling on both parties to implement the ceasefire.
I think that's what we need first, a cessation of hostilities. Both parties need to give up on the military option. There is no military option to come to a solution in this conflict. And I think the people in South Sudan need peace. They deserve peace. And politicians are called upon to get their act together and to come to a conclusion soon.
Swag says, as the biggest economy in the European Union, Germany is a major contributor to South Sudan's peace talks in Addis Ababa by funding the sponsor of the talks and is closely following the developments through the European Union envoy in Addis. He says the people of South Sudan have suffered enough.
You know, it depends on the will of the people in charge, basically on politicians to help to bring about peace. In the end, you know, the international mediators can try and help, but if the people in charge don't want to come together, there will be no peace.
The Regional Intergovernmental Authority on Development, ORIGAD, postponed the negotiations on Monday after negotiators from the opposition refused to attend the roundtable stakeholder discussions, claiming they were not inclusive. IGAD mediators say they are going to conduct wider consultations before they announce the next round of talks. Both government and opposition delegates have expressed their willingness to attend the next round of talks. IGAD has given both sides until August 9 to reach final peace agreement. The conflict has displaced more than 1 million people from their homes since the outbreak of violence in mid-December, according to the UN. And famine is looming as people are unable to farm with the onset of the rainy season. For VOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
Augustine Ting Mayai, a researcher with the Juba-based CERD Institute, says it's not surprising that the IGAD-mediated talks are on hold. IGAD adjourned the talks on Monday after the opposition complained that the stakeholders joining the talks favor the government. Mayai tells reporter Philip Aleu the 60-day period of time agreed to by both President Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar to form a transitional government may pass without a deal.
The two parties are not necessarily committed to ending this conflict, and that it reflects on that attitude quite squarely.
And the President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar had committed themselves to 60 days at a minimum of negotiation, and at the end of the week they would form an interim government. Do you think that in any way that 60 days at a minimum will still be observed?
My opinion with that, this is another rhetoric. This is another sort of understanding that could basically fail through. And that is exactly what we see today. So I don't think there is that commitment that would deliver for the 60 days period that was given. Until we see that, I don't think South Sudanese should be hopeful.
Now the government and the rebels have both accused the IGAD in one way or the other. The latest accusation come from the opposition when they said that the latest postponement of the talks by IGAD is actually backtracking. So do you think that IGAD still have the leverage to mediate this peace talk?
I think IGAD still has the leverage, given the fact that it is also backed by international community. It can make its case through the UN to bring the two parties together to negotiate and be able to agree to whatever mechanisms that have been laid out. IGAD would need to work harder than perhaps it has been now, given the fact that the two parties are not necessarily cooperating to make sure that there's a pressure from other parties to make sure that they are brought to the table.
In the press release, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, says that they will present the recommendation to the UN Security Council and other partners in this peace process on South Sudan. So do you think that there may be some consequences if they recommend sanctions, for example, to both leaders on the warring parties?
Right. I think the fundamental mission for doing that is to make sure that the two parties come to the table. If they do not, then there should be consequences, and sanctions are mostly tools used for pressuring the parties to end their issues. And I think that is a good way to go. The IGAD should take that further and be able to mobilize other bodies, regional or international.
Already the United States government slapped some sanction on two individuals, and we don't see the effect. Do you think that any consequences for the delay of this talk may have some different impact?
No, the sanctions that were tabled against two military officials here in South Sudan don't necessarily have any robust impact on the country or on the political leaders. I would say the U.S. sort of wasted its energy but it could also be a sign that there is more that is coming. But as far as the impact, this would not impact them until you get to them. But it could be a point of departure. It could be a sign that there is more that's coming.
That's Justin Ting Mayai, a researcher at the SAD Institute, a Juba-based think tank, speaking to Philip Aleu earlier today. The upper chamber of South Sudan's National Assembly, known as the Council of States, today unanimously endorsed this May 9th agreement signed between President Kiir and David Yaw Yaw, the leader of the South Sudan Democratic Movement, Cobra Faction. For VOA News, Mungume Debs Rakarinj reports from Juba.
It is the opinion of this assembly that we take the vote counted standing, because it's a matter of two-thirds here. So those who favored a ratification of this agreement and passing it by this house, stand up. Sit down. Those against? No. Zero. Abstention.
Council of State's acting speaker, Aldo Ajao Deng, instructs lawmakers to vote, and all the 32 members who are present endorse the agreement. 18 members were absent. Earlier this month, at the official opening of this year's session of South Sudan's National Assembly, President Kiir urged members of the Council of States to move quickly to approve his agreement with Yaw Yaw in order to ensure lasting peace in Pibor. Canon Clement Janda chaired a 15-member advisory committee of the Council of States tasked to study the agreement and come up with recommendations for the government.
The agreement is a worthwhile achievement and a necessary foundation for peaceful coexistence on the one hand between and among the inhabitants of Jonglei State and the people of Jonglei and the Equatorial States in general on the other. Thus, it is worthy of ratification by the August House.
The agreement provides for the creation of the Greater Pibor Area and a special administrative status with David Yaw Yaw as the administrator, but under supervision of President Kiir. Under the agreement, 6 counties will be established in the Greater Pibor Area. A special development fund for the new area will also be established. In addition, Janda's committee recommends the people of Pibor County be consulted on all matters regarding the supervision of their area before it is separated from the rest of Jonglei State. Janda's committee also suggests that professionals be employed to run the area.
And in the same vein, functionaries to be named therein should be competent persons, so they will ably render the long-awaited valuable services to the area and its greater people.
Isaac Sumu Keliopa, the Western Equatoria State member of the Council of States, says the agreement demonstrates that the government is committed to bringing peace to all areas of the country.
If any part of this nation is suffering due to wars and all those kinds of calamity, of course, it will affect the whole of the citizen of this nation. Our government have made a clear statement on that. The government is for peace. The government is not for a war.
Keliopa reminded other legislators that once peace is established, the next priority should be reconciliation of the area's communities. Legislator Aban Deng agrees.
Yes. There was a conflict, and those warring groups are now come to the peace. But the hatred of the war will still remaining in hearts of the people. To make people doing one work after signing the agreement and passing the agreement and implementing the agreement, you need to bring all those who are fighting among themselves together.
Deng says this is the only way to achieve lasting peace. The Council of State's vote of approval means the agreement is now binding. For VOA News, I am Mugume Debs Rakarinj in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Leaving your home in an emergency can be very disruptive, both emotionally and physically. The stress of relocation is especially hard on children, who naturally look to adults for answers to the new uncertainties in their lives. So if your family is in this situation, Reassure your children that they're safe and that you will protect them. Let them talk about their feelings and establish a new routine for eating and bedtime. Playtime is important too. All these things can help a displaced child feel a bit better, knowing that the family will be able to one day regain control and get on with their lives.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, there are reports that a Sudanese woman who was convicted of apostasy, then freed, then detained, may go free today. That story is coming up.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Put your flags up
in the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think parents should choose the people their children marry? Why?
No, because I think every individual is different and unique in their own ways. And children should be allowed to make their own choices because it's a lifetime choices. And these are lives that they're going to live and not their parents.
I agree that parents should choose partners for their children, considering long ago in the African traditional marriages, when parents involved themselves with their relationships with their children, there were less cases of divorce, of complications in marriages as they are today.
I don't think so. That's African traditional society. It used to happen back then, before the civilization of, you know, humanity. But right now, I think every child has a right to choose their spouses.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A Sudanese Christian woman whose death sentence for committing apostasy was overturned this week was later detained again, is expected to go free today. Mariam Ibrahim Yahya is in her 30 day of detention after she was taken into custody at Khartoum Airport while trying to board a plane. Mariam's lawyer says official papers are being processed at this hour for her release. Sudanese officials say yesterday her travel documents were illegal. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
This past hour, defense lawyer Sharif Ali Sharif said he was on his way to the police station where Mariam, along with her 19-month-old son and her one-month-old baby, have been held since Tuesday. Mariam was accused of possessing false travel documents issued by the Embassy of South Sudan. Her husband Daniel Wani is from South Sudan and is also a U.S. citizen. Sharif is cautiously optimistic. Mariam, her husband, and two small children will soon be on a plane to South Sudan and eventually en route to the United States.
We have just heard information that they will release her until today, but we don't have concrete information. We haven't received a formal letter, but we are going to check.
Sharif says if Mariam is released, the Attorney General must declare her innocence.
She can't leave the country. She will just be released and stay in Sudan.
Yesterday, South Sudan's chargé d'affaires, Kaw Nack, was summoned by the government in Khartoum, along with his American counterpart, to answer allegations that they issued illegal travel documents to Mariam. Nack says Sudan's foreign affairs minister asked, "Why did you issue Mariam travel documents and she is not a South Sudanese?"
And
My answer, I confirm, is not a fake document. It's a genuine document. So, and the reason I gave her those documents, first, our constitution accepts dual citizenship. Based on that, I gave her emergency travel document.
Nax says he does not see any reason why the government should be offended, since the court itself had already declared Mariam innocent of all charges.
We have a confidence in the judiciary of Sudan and confidence of Sudan government, and both expressed that Mariam was innocent because the court of Sudan declared that Mariam is innocent. She's not guilty of any charge.
Observers and human rights groups says Mariam's ordeal will not be over until she and her children leave Sudan and land safely in another country. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
The United Nations and human rights activists all over the world are demanding states to end the practice of torture, which is prohibited under all circumstances under international law. Every year on June 26, the world marks the International Day in Support of Victims of Torture to honor and support hundreds of thousands of men, women and children who are victims of this terrible crime. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Torture is not a new phenomenon. It has been practiced throughout the ages and continues to be employed today in all regions of the world. Reliable statistics are not possible because torture is hidden. It occurs in secret in police stations, prisons, and places of detention. To get a sense of its scope, the human rights organization Amnesty International reports over the past 5 years, it has received reports of torture in 141 countries from every region of the world. And the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva says every day it receives new reports of torture from Asia, Africa, the Americas, Europe, and Oceania. Mona Rishmawi is chief of the Rule of Law, Equality, and Non-Discrimination Branch of the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. She tells VOA, torture occurs in states that turn a blind eye to this practice and allow it to continue with impunity. While it mainly takes place in repressive regimes, she says torture also occurs in democracies.
The difference is that when it happens, somebody acts. There is a parliament, there is a question in the parliament, the minister gets embarrassed, somebody does something. But if the state really, if the state does not feel accountable to its people, then these excesses happen a lot more.
Numerous international treaties and national and domestic laws prohibit the practice of torture. This year will mark the 30th anniversary of the seminal Convention Against Torture adopted by the UN General Assembly on December 10th, Human Rights Day. Though the convention has been ratified by 154 states, torture continues to be widely and systematically practiced in many of these countries. The United Nations reports 41 states have refused to ratify the convention, and several of them continue to permit torture and ill treatment against detainees. Torture ranges from severe beatings to public sexual humiliation and rape. The victim often is forced to witness pain being inflicted on children or other family members. Mona Rishmawi says the impact on the victim is substantial. While many are left with severe physical injuries, Rishmawi says the worst effect is the mental anguish victims are forced to endure.
These people were victims of intentional injury. These people were intentionally brutalized. You know, the moment you humiliate somebody and you take their dignity away, it's very difficult for these people to reconcile with themselves. It's actually, you know, that moment stays with them for a very long time.
Despite the horrors inflicted upon survivors, healing is possible. The UN Voluntary Fund for Victims of Torture provides humanitarian, medical, psychological, legal, and financial aid to many in need. The fund also supports many of the non-governmental organizations that run programs to rehabilitate victims of torture. Under international law, states must ensure that victims of torture and ill treatment are fully compensated for their pain and suffering. The United Nations is calling on governments to fulfill this obligation. It notes governments are accountable for their actions and warns they cannot torture people with impunity. It says victims of torture deserve justice, and those who perpetrate these crimes must be punished. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Twenty years into South Africa's democracy, race remains a big contributing factor to high level of poverty faced by children. South African Human Rights Commission says many children are trapped in the injustice of poverty, including lack of access to adequate nutrition, clean running water, and proper sanitation. Tuso Khumalo reports from Johannesburg.
In a recently released study, the South African Human Rights Commission concludes the racist legacy of the apartheid era is still impacting children of non-white families. The report is titled Poverty Traps and Social Exclusion Amongst Children in South Africa. Researchers say children of color make up the majority of those who are not educated, without employable skills, and hindered by poor nutrition and lack access to basic social services. The study also notes that South Africa's low economic growth and chronic unemployment rate of 25% have compounded the problems keeping so many children in poverty. Speaking at the launch of the report in Johannesburg, Human Rights Commission Chairman Lawrence Mushwana said in a country of South Africa's resources, the government needs to do better to address child poverty.
The dire consequences of poverty cannot be emphasized. There are vulnerable exposure to all forms of social ills, such as drugs, crime, and abuse, are all inexplicable when happening in a country such as South Africa.
Zain Dango, special advisor to the Minister of Social Development, attended the launch of the report on behalf of the government and pledged to work with civil groups to expand and extend poverty reduction policies.
We need complementary strategies. We need our social protection system to be improved. Aside from the universalization of the child support grant, the Minister of Social Development has thrown a policy balloon over the last 2 weeks. She is setting out her desire for the child support grant to be extended to the age of 23.
Many economists here argue the government's grant approach is not financially viable given the strain on the budget and really doesn't address the fundamental need for a solid education to lift children out of the cycle of poverty. Sivens van der Berg is a professor of economics at the University of Stellenbosch in Cape Town.
Every child should read. You can't go beyond grade 4 and really make much of the school system if you don't have a proper base in terms of reading.
South Africa's education system has been ranked amongst the bottom third of more than 140 countries by the World Economic Forum. It is second to last in maths and sciences. It is underfunded, lacks qualified teachers, and is plagued by scandal and mismanagement. Van der Berg says for other social intervention programs to be effective, the government will need to improve its efficiency in public expenditure, especially in education. Tuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's all we had prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Original by Congolese musician Fally Ipupa.
Sula maginwe ya sandra ya bomimboka chuba chuba ah
We have been listening to that test of Fally Ipupa with the song Original. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.